This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. This is episode 204, and we start this show talking about Josh Rosen, which I think we're going to talk about for pretty much the rest of the season. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, USA Today's NFL Wire site. And my co-host, as always, is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com. He comes from SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site. And Seth, aside from the loss, because the Cardinals lose 20-17 on a last-second field goal by Sebastian Janikowski, they're now 0-4 on the season, but if we look at the quarterback situation, can we not say that that game, at least in part, was a success, right?
Huge success in a lot of ways. Josh Rosen looks like as good as any rookie has ever looked in throwing for 55% completion rate and only one touchdown, under 200 yards. But then also, I mean, if you're into that sort of thing, they're still free and clear in the Nick Bosa sweepstakes to get their edge rusher opposite Chandler Jones for Steve Wilkes' 4-3 defense. And, you know, so everything's coming up Cardinals at this point, if we want to put a positive spin on everything.
And so that's our tonight's show recording on a Tuesday night, episode 204, probably listen to on a Wednesday or a Thursday as we move forward. We're going to talk about Josh Rosen. That's going to be number one on our list. We're going to talk about Josh Rosen, how he played, what that means moving forward. We're going to talk about, you know, some of the issues, because obviously the 0-4 Cardinals have drawn the ire of many Cardinals fans and media. So we're going to talk about that end of the game decision, which led to their loss, talk about positives and negatives from the game. Well, we'll look at the coaching staff. Is Wilkes a bad coach? Do they need to make changes on the staff? And then we'll take a look again ahead to the San Francisco game, which, you know, all things considered, it should be a winnable game with no Jimmy Garoppolo. But then again, you know, Cardinals 0-4, they are real close to being 2-2. To be honest, real close to being 2-2. And we'll talk about, so what can we look at moving forward? So starting off with Josh Rosen, how well do you, like you talked about it just a little bit, but how well did that debut, well, not the debut, how well did that first start go from? Because from my perspective, from anything that we've seen from a rookie quarterback, to me, he looked nothing like a rookie quarterback.
No, I mean, he looked poised. He looked calm. He looked smooth. He looked like a guy that commanded respect and that's really hard when you factor in not only is he a rookie, but he's 21. I mean, he is 21 years old. Like, it's crazy to think that. And he came out, he made throws that, I mean, there were throws that even Carson Palmer in his heyday for the Cardinals, which wasn't his heyday, but what in his heyday for the Cardinals, wasn't able to complete because he didn't have the arm strength that Rosen has right now. Obviously, Rosen's substantially younger and has taken substantially less hits. But when you look at it from that perspective, I mean, he put the ball in places that, I mean, what would you say, maybe 7 to 8 quarterbacks can make throws, some of the throws he was making. He was a guy that gave his team a chance to win. He didn't look too big for the moment, or the moment didn't look too big for him, excuse me. And then I think for me, the biggest thing that came out of this was I always thought Rosen was, you know, I always had him as that kind of like pseudo QB one. Like I always said, if he's the guy you want to start this year, or if you want a quarterback that's going to start this year, Rosen should be your pick. You know, everybody knows my affection and affinity for Lamar Jackson as a player. So, but when you look at Rosen, he was obviously the most polished. But the biggest thing coming out was all these dumb rumors. And we can say dumb because you and I said they were dumb before the draft, before the Cardinals. We even thought that the Cardinals had a chance to draft him. They were dumb after the Cardinals drafted him. I mean, and they're still dumb to this day about, you know, his personality and the concerns of these those things. And and then after the game, he completely 100% toes the company line, says nothing negative, says, oh, I agreed with the calls. We were in Jay's range. That means we go to Jay at that point. Like, he didn't even hesitate. He didn't even bat an eyelash. It wasn't even like a sarcastic 21-year-old that knows more than other people making a statement. It was just, it was, this is what we knew going in we were trying to accomplish on this drive. We accomplished it. It just didn't work out. And I thought that was really big of him because, let's be honest, there are a number of reasons that Josh Rosen could have said something else to the effect of, you know, this falls on, you know, the guys I'm throwing to, this obviously not that callous or cavalier, but, you know, this falls on the guys I'm throwing to, or, you know, it's unfortunate the coaches took the ball out of my hand at the end of the game, or all of these other things that are true. I mean, 7 drops in the game, turtling kind of at the end, going very conservative after 2 touchdown drives. It was the epitome of what you want in your franchise quarterback, in that not only is he delivering on the field, but then after the game, he's not there to show that he's bigger than the team or the staff or anything like that. So I just thought from beginning to after the game, he kind of just blew me away.
Yeah, we've seen – and. Being that he was, the last of the rookie quarterbacks to get a start, you know, aside from Lamar Jackson, of the 4, of the big 4.
But Lamar Jackson's at least played, like you said.
Right.
So, but, I mean, he was the last rookie quarterback to even see the field.
What we saw from other rookie, I mean, Sam Darnold threw that pick 6 and then looked impressive, but then is kind of tailed off. Baker Mayfield has been both dazzling and made some really stupid mistakes. And Josh Allen looks very much like the project that many believe he needs to be. And he's playing on an atrocious Bills offense,
right?
Which doesn't help him at all. He might get David Carr if things keep up the way they are. But Rosen, you know, you always see some rookie mistakes. I did not note any. This is a guy who is first NFL start. I mean, one of the things we said, hey, there's going to be growing pains. But in that first start, there were no real growing pains. There was a ground ball snap that he took, and he just managed to pick it up the ground, roll left, throw it away. It was nothing. He was completely in control of everything. Like we kind of mentioned, he looked like a veteran quarterback. He was just having fun out there. He never got jittery. Now, granted, he was overall well protected. So we haven't seen what happens when he, you know, even Carson Palmer, you see veteran quarterbacks, really good quarterbacks, when they get hit a few times, you start seeing the happy feet, this and you see them making quicker decisions. Even Carson Palmer, who is great. I mean, you watch that when you watch the Football Life about Carson Palmer, I was amazed at some of the things that were said about him by his teammates. Now, obviously, that was glowing praise. But Josh Rosen, in just one start, basically put his stamp on this team and said, he's a starter. I've got this. We can do this. It energized the team. It energized the coaching staff. Steve Wilks is excited as all get out. And understandably so, as bad as the team is playing, he has that to hang his hat on, is the fact that he played so well. And like you said, after the game was every bit as impressive, because when he was asked, would you have liked to have had that in situation? He's like, oh, no, it was absolutely right call. We, you know, of course we want to give it to David Johnson and give it to Phil Dawson to do that. It's totally within his range and just didn't work out. Even a competitor would say, as a competitor, I'd love to have the ball in my hands and have the chance. He didn't even say that. It wouldn't even have to be controversial to say, you know, I'd love to have the ball in my hands in that sort of situation. That might even mean something Carson Palmer would have said. But in something, I'll go back. Everything that's like, and this has happened with Carson Palmer too. When Carson Palmer came to town, there was this reputation that he had. That diva, he was completely different than what he was made out to be. And same thing with Rosen. You know, there's some swagger there. And so he made some, you know, those off-the-cuff comments about 9 mistakes, whatever, on draft night. And he was, you know, he was pissed off about this. And he doesn't, he is a conscientious young man who's very confident. He's got some swagger, but he's also a great teammate. And in a moment in terms of personality, after he was I think I talked about this on our show after the draft. After he was introduced to the media in the press conference, and we were all writing our stories. So this is, I guess, it was on day two of the draft. So day one, he's drafted. They fly him out day two before the picks start happening. He's introduced to the media, and then maybe it was on that Saturday on day three they brought him out. I don't remember which one. The details don't matter, but the fact of the matter is, after he's all done, he's gone back down to the back end of the facility. Reporters are writing their story. He comes back into the media room and introduces himself individually to each one of the reporters that were working there. I didn't experience that with any other player, any other rookie, in the 6 years I've been doing this down at this facility, you know, covering the team like that. This was the first one I've ever seen of that, and very thoughtful young man. And so you see that he's really kind of the whole package. And my goodness, how were the Cardinals fortunate? Now, I going into the draft, Baker Mayfield was by far my favorite player. And I like Sam Darnold too, but I thought Baker Mayfield was going to be special. And I still think he is. But even with Mayfield, you saw some mistakes. There were rookie mistakes. You didn't even get that from Rosen. And so, as bad as the Sam Bradford situation was, guess what? We don't have to worry about Sam Bradford anymore. It's Josh Rosen's team, and that's exciting.
It is, and it's one of those situations where, you know, you look at it now, and I think the shine is off of the this could be a playoff team idea. I don't know. Do you have that handy-dandy chart on how many teams have ever made – the playoffs with this record and their first, you know, X amount of games?
I think 0-4 isn't maybe once. I think I heard it on the radio. I think once they've made the postseason. Now,
so when you look at that, you know, the shine of the playoffs is gone and all of that stuff, which is fine because you're still seeing intrigue and interest in this team, and it's because of Rosen. I mean, because quite frankly, if they had started Sam Bradford on Sunday, you know, if they don't pull Bradford against the Bears and they just keep going with Bradford and start him on Sunday and lose again. I mean, from a business standpoint for you and I, there's literally nothing worse. I mean, that would have been horrid because there would have been no attraction to the game whatsoever. Outside of the why aren't they playing Josh Rosen calls.
Exactly.
So, but now when you get a guy that like this is, and I, this is like super overhyping it. And I don't want people to like take this as in like, oh, he's going to be a Hall of Famer. But like, this is akin to Randy Johnson pitching in, you know, 99 through 2002. That's what this is that you may not be interested in the Diamondbacks, but you're interested in watching greatness. And that is what the intrigue level is with Rosen right now, is that, all right, well, the Cardinals may only win 3 to 5 games this year, but by God, I'm going to tune in every snap that Josh Rosen's playing because I want to see how good this kid can be. Because, I mean, something that I'm sure we'll discuss, but the highest graded debut ever from Pro Football Focus. I mean, you look at the stats and you're like, okay, 180 yards, you know, 55, 56% completion rate.
It doesn't tell the story at all.
It doesn't tell the story of how good he was and how much he was held back and let down by the surrounding components of him. And so, and for the first time, I think we can say unequivocally, not the offensive line.
Right. I mean, with there are, you count as seven drops. I was being conservative and felt, okay, that were legit drops. Four were legitimate drops. Pro Football Focus gave him three. Darren Urban from azcardinals.com said there were five. And so you're looking, but it's just the way they were. The plays down the field, Christian Kirk's drop. It's what in the world? Like, how do you drop that? That was moments after my tweet. You know, he had the screen pass play and then he had the jet sweep. And so I tweeted, did we just see Christian Kirk become the most important offensive player, best offensive player on the team? Boom, drop the ball. No, he didn't. I jinxed him, but he had one. JJ Nelson, jeez. He's got one job, and that's run fast down the field and get behind people. Rosen dead underthrow it a little bit. Come on. You just got to cradle that baby into the arms, and he dropped it. Fitch dropped when it was an easy, but it was a perfectly thrown ball for the situation. He should have caught that on that second down play. And then Ricky Seals-Jones on a beautiful throw just almost gets it picked off, almost knocks it into a defender's hands. I would call those the most egregious and what the projected, like Pro Football Focus said that he missed out on what 87 yards of passing catches, yards.
Yeah.
And Darren Urban projected he would have gone 20 of 27 for 267 yards and two touchdowns. You know, just after my game, my reaction was that should have been a 300 yard, three touchdown game. To be honest, that should have been a 300 yard, three touchdown game. And everyone would be talking about just how many. Rosen's play was great, but his numbers, the statistics you're going to look at are saying, oh, that was really pedestrian. But the fact of the matter is, look how good he was in just one start. And you think that's one start. And he's not even, that's his first start. So while he didn't see mistakes, but so how much better can he get? That's the part that's so exciting moving forward. And, you know, I'm buying in. And as we talk a little bit more on the podcast, we talked about it before the show, I'm bullish about what the rest of the season is. In fact, I tweeted and people call me crazy. I'm calling it. Cardinals are going to finish the season 6-10. Cardinals are going to go 6-6 the rest of the way with Josh Rosen. Cause I think he's going to have that. Well, between his impact on the offense, which going on a little bit is I think we're really underplaying just how much Sam Bradford ruined their offense for whatever reason. And that and the improvements that I think that are coming defensively simply because with a new defensive scheme, if you've got talented players and you've got a solid scheme, it'll take you half the season, but then you'll be really good. And so I think that's going to – the Cardinals are going to finish the season strong, in my opinion, whether that's 5-win, 6-win. I think they can go – I think personally, 6-10 is kind of what I'd love to see. Steve Wilks is already talking about, you know, the last year's Charger team, Trey Boston, who was on that team last year, the Los Angeles Chargers team that went 0-4 to start and finished 9-7 and almost made the playoffs. That way, you know, Wilks is big on not talking about the big picture, but he is pointing out, hey, it still can be done. Let's take this one day at a time and not lose hope. So Josh Rosen has me completely. I'm completely bought in. I know it's real homerish of me, but you know I'm still going to look at it analytically. But part of me as a fan said, "Hey, there's still some fun to be had this year."
There is, and there's a reason to tune in every week, and that's the biggest thing. Because man, it sucks being 0-4, but what sucks worse is knowing that. What would you say? I mean, in 2011 or in 2012, what would you say, after the 4-0 start, pretty feverish in terms of fandom, and then at about 4-6, it was like,
the wheels fell off.
It was like, do we have fans? Like, where are they? what's, because I mean, that's the thing, we've talked about this before, in Arizona, there's so many things to do. I mean, the Suns just had the first pick in the draft for the first time in their franchise history and drafted a center. And I mean, people are chomping. I mean, there were arguments on Twitter today, whether the report of him having 24 points and 10 rebounds or 24 points and 9 rebounds was accurate, because he deserves, you know, they want to know if he got a double-double in his, in the first preseason game of his career. I mean, it's preseason, no, but that's how, that's what this, you know, town offers. You have literally everything at your fingertips to deal with. And so if you don't provide a winner, ask Diamondbacks. Nobody's going to show up. Nobody's going to care. And so you have to give the, you have to give the fans something to tune in for. And right now that's Josh Rosen. And
absolutely,
there's nothing wrong with that being what fans tune in for a, like you said, a hopefully 6-10 season. There's nothing wrong with that.
And with that, we will move on to the next segment of the show. We're going to get into that end of the game decision. Was it, as one of our friends called it, a chicken crap football, cowardly football? That's what we're going to talk about next on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. As a reminder from our friends over at Harrys.com, they continue to give us this opportunity, this great deal, and I'm going to continue to tell about it, just how great Harry's is. Their razors are amazing. I told you, it's been about a year now. I made the switch. I've been using an electric razor for years because of the cost of, couldn't bear paying the cost of the, you know, the name brand blades or the, just how bad the disposable blades were. But I made the switch to Harry's and I love it. The shave is great. It's close. That's high quality and it's super affordable. It's a great deal. You will not regret making the switch. It's high quality. And because of the offer that they have, you guys as listeners can, they've got a trial offer for you. Go to claim yours, to go into harrys.com/CRED. By selling directly over the internet, they can offer blades at a price that's much lower than the leading brand. And instead of $4 or more per blade, you can get it for just $2 a blade. It's going to be a high quality, close, comfortable shave. They also have other shaving and grooming products. The shave gel, I love. It feels great. It smells great. And here's the thing. If you don't love your shave, if you let Harry's know within 30 days, they'll give you a full refund. But we've got a trial offer for you. It's $13 value, comes with everything that you need to start off. Sign up, get it. You get the handle, you get the 5-blade razor, you get the shave gel and a travel blade cover. You can redeem it by going to harrys.com/CRED. So go to harrys.com/CRED to redeem your offer and let them know that we sent you to help support the show. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And now let's talk about, so we've moved on from Josh Rosen. We're going to talk a little bit about, obviously he's involved with this, but the end of the game decision that ultimately led to the Cardinals losing the ball game. The game is tied at 17. They're moving the ball down the field. And then when they get within field goal range, things change. And so they run the ball on first down. So they're approaching the 2-minute warning. They run the ball on first down, 2-yard game. They run the ball again on second down, 2-yard game, takes the 2-minute warning. So now they're at 3rd and 6, and the decision is, okay, Seattle's got one more timeout. They decide to run the ball one more time. Went for no gain. They burn their final timeout. They bring out Phil Dawson. Should be, you know, it's not the easiest, but 45-yard field goal, that's a field goal that Phil Dawson should make. They should take the lead. They have a defense that hadn't given up any third down conversions. So they'd be giving Seattle the ball about 1:50 left from their 25-yard line and no timeouts, down 3, to be able to come back and, you know, to either tie it or score the winning touchdown. And they trust the defense to do that. Problem was, Phil Dawson kicks a field goal and misses it wide right. End of the story is, they move down the field a little bit. Sebastian Janikowski nails 52-yarders. Time expires, 20-17. Seattle wins. Now, it comes down to this. Josh Rosen was playing well. He moved them down the field. The passing game was in sync. They stopped it to, for whatever reason, they went to the run on first and second down, and then when they were in, you know, third and medium and long, they decided to keep with it and play conservatively, play for the field goal, play for the win. That has taken a lot of heat. And Mike McCoy, Steve Wilks, it's taken a lot of heat from a lot of people, both media and fans. What was your take on that? Because we have two very different takes overall on this end of game scenario.
I think it was just the wrong idea for this team at this juncture. One, you're 0-3 and you're playing conservative. I mean, you're 0-3, dude. Like, you got nothing to lose at this point. But two, I think it goes to the bigger issue of something that, you know, I've kind of talked about before, and that's identity. And the identity of the Cardinals was supposed to be, you know, run the ball, play defense, you know, let your defense win games. And that's still the identity of the Cardinals. They don't run the ball well at all, and their defense is actually
inconsistent, to say at least. Put it nicely, inconsistent.
Yeah, inconsistent. That's a good way to say it. And so you adapt as you get more information. And the information is this, that you're going up against the best quarterback in comeback scenarios in the NFL, in Russell Wilson. Even if, and this is all if you make the field goal. This isn't, you know, saying, oh, well, you're planning on missing this 45 or whatever it is. But you're going up against the best quarterback in the NFL in comeback scenarios, and you're giving him 1 minute and 53 seconds to get into field goal range to tie or win the game. You and I have been Cardinals fans for far too long and watched Russell Wilson do this far too many times to be comfortable with saying, okay, Russell Wilson, here's the ball back with a minute 53 to go in that scenario. So I think that was kind of what my problem was, is that they played, and somebody wrote this, so I'm not taking credit for this, and I thought it was perfect. Wilkes played the game like there was a minute 59 left in the game, not 2:59 left in the game when they had the first and 10 from the 36 or whatever it was. And so instead of trying to get one first down and then knowing that you could take the clock down to basically nothing and kick the same field goal, he tried to do it with a bunch of time. And obviously they weren't trying to not pick up a first down. That would be silly. But there was no passes thrown. They were playing conservative. They said, and he said this in afterwards, you know, he wanted to force Pete Carroll to use his last timeout. And instead they, you know, ran the ball three times and gained 4 yards and had to kick a 45-yard field goal with their kicker who, you know, let's be honest, over two seasons has been not worth the money.
And my take on it is, I, especially when I look at the third down play in isolation, I have zero problem with the philosophy that they did, because you look at and I look at the perspective of everything. You've gotten your rookie quarterback in his first NFL start to put that team in a position to win. Taking an analogy from Major League Baseball, managers will often, when their starting pitcher has put them in position that they want them to, and there is a little bit of leverage in that situation, that's when the starter comes out and the reliever comes in, so that they're not in a position to lose the game. And with the rookie quarterback in his first NFL start, I can completely see that. Josh Rosen had done all good, but what do we see from rookie quarterbacks? And we saw it from him in the week before. He got picked off in a critical moment. And so, one, we'd seen it from the previous week before. Let's take it out of his hands. We're in position to win the game. And, oh, guess what? We have one of the best running backs in football. So this should do results. Now, on third down, I'm going to go back to that. For me, that third down play, I have zero problem with it because of what had happened on first and second down. So they're at the two-minute warning. It's third and six. And so you, one of two things are going to happen. So, well, if you get the first down, fantastic. If you don't, you cause them to burn the timeout. You still kick the field goal. And, okay, if they make it, you know, it's fantastic. If here's the other scenario. If they go with a pass play and it's incomplete, then they don't burn the timeout. They still kick the field goal. And if even if they take the lead, now you're giving Russell Wilson even the same amount of time, only you now give him an extra timeout to do it. And so in that scenario, third and six, with the it makes sense to go with the run. Okay. At minimum, you run the time down, you get the so and then the field goal is supposed to be made otherwise. So Phil Dawson messed it all up. He messed it all because he missed the field goal. And because if they do that, then you're kicking off. Then it's about a minute 50. Instead of starting from their 35, they're starting from their 25. And then they're, you know, at the worst case scenario, basically with the time that they had left and the way the Cardinals trusted their defense, they're not going to give up a touchdown. So they might get into field goal range and force overtime. And so it's still a pretty favorable situation. In that sense, I don't have problem with it. The problem is if you look on first and second down is that they ran the ball twice and failed. So they have, as we've said, is David Johnson not the best running back in football? That offensive line, David Johnson, should have put them in a situation where it should have been third and two where a run play makes sense. And it still was a play for no game, so the result might have been the same. But philosophically, I have no problem with that, and I don't blame it on the coaches. I don't blame it on this and that. Once you got to third down, I think that was probably the smart/safe call. Except if you and you told me about this talked about the play calling. Had they gone with a play call using Rosen's athleticism, okay, roll out. If you've got something you can make, do it. If not, run, try to get the first down. If not, slide, still the clock runs, and it has the same effect as with David Johnson. So the play call selection or the creativity could have been used. Maybe they didn't have a play like that in the playbook that they practiced all week. Who knows? But I am not going to kill the coaches for that decision because that is a viable thing to do when you have the best running back in football and when you have a defense that had not given up a third down conversion all game. And so you trust them. Okay, if we're going to pin them back all the way back to their 25 or even before that or deeper, that it's going to have they're going to have to convert a couple of third downs. And guess what? They haven't done it yet. They haven't been good on third down, which means we'll be able to stop and get the ball back and put them in a high leverage situation, not with a tie. Because when you give Russell Wilson the ball with a tie, there's a different sort of urgency because they know no matter what, they're going to overtime. So you put them down with a little more leverage against them, and you're going to be able to force that turnover, that critical turnover, and come away with the win. That's my take on it. I understand what people are saying about playing to win or playing not to lose. I just thought once they ran the ball first down and second down, there really wasn't, for me, it was the smartest move to go and run the ball on third down unless you've got a playbook in your pocket with everything, all the safeguards in place where it's not going to be incomplete. Because if it's going to be incomplete, then you're putting yourself in a more precarious situation with Russell Wilson, who is the king of comebacks.
Yeah, and I mean, when it all is said and done, when it all said and done, I think it comes down to this, and something that we've talked about and we've known before is that defensive-minded coaches are typically conservative. And I've kind of drawn the comparison of what we've seen thus far in the Wilkes era and regime to who Todd Bowles has been in New York with the Jets. And that has not, you know, exactly worked out in New York, and it kind of reared its ugly head again on Sunday. Again, I watch too much football, so I know these stupid little things that happen. But on Sunday, the game was 25 or 26. I think it was 25 to 3 or something like that. And the Jets were driving. And on fourth down and manageable, not even like fourth and long, but fourth and manageable, they kicked a field goal in the fourth quarter. And it's like, what did that just do for you? Like, there was literally no rhyme or reason to kick a field goal there, because it doesn't change. Now you still have to get three touchdowns. And so it's the idea that defensive coaches are by nature conservative offensively, because they're not worried about the offense. They're worried about the defense, and they believe in their defense, and they believe innately that their defense will get a stop on the next drive or this or that or the other. And so I think that's kind of what we're seeing. The difference in Bruce Arians and Steve Wilkes is simply Wilkes is looking at it from the perspective of, I want my defense to have a chance to win the game for me. And Arians' perspective was always, I don't want to have to bring my defense back out on the field. And so those two things, you know, are what caused the difference and what we're seeing, you know, now. And it's a complete 180 from anything Bruce Arians would have done, that's for sure.
Well, in fantasy to remember, he got tired of some of the no risk and no biscuit moves that he did. It paid off several times. Like, it paid off against the Saints in 2016, in 2015, when David Johnson took the touchdown. It's paid off many, many times. But it also burned him. Think about last year, the game against the Texans, when they went for it on fourth and one deep in their own territory, and Adrian Peterson got stoned, and then they gave up a touchdown. Basically lost them the game.
Well, you know, but it also goes back.
That's the other side of the coin. So if you don't do no risk and no biscuit, you're doing this, and so.
Yeah. Right. Well, but that goes back to what we talked about too in this, and that with this entire thing, Steve Wilkes inherently is going to err on the side of caution with his defense, whereas it literally didn't matter who the quarterback was. Bruce Arians believed his offense, his scheme, and his play calling. I mean, you just said it. Like, Blaine Gabbert at the helm, and he's going for deep in his own territory with a makeshift O-line, Blaine Gabbert, and 32-year-old Adrian Peterson. I mean, we saw it with Ryan Lindley in 2014. Like, dude doesn't care. He does not care. He believes that strongly, and it's not – I hate saying it that way, because then it sounds like you're saying, oh, well, you know, Wilkes doesn't believe in Rosen. No, it's not that. It's just that's the mindset of an offensive coach versus a defensive coach, and that's the mindset you're getting now for this team. And like you said, the one had run its course. I just think that it's a mindset of losing is what it is. In an NFL that is unabashedly about offense and playmaking, to be the team that's saying we're not going to take any risk, we're going to be as risk adverse as we possibly can be, is a really ballsy thing, especially when you're not toting around, you know, the Jacksonville Jaguars defense.
And I bet these changes over the next few weeks as they build more, they have more confidence in Rosen, because like I said, they had seen Rosen turn the ball over in a critical situation the week before. Now, granted, it was a tough situation, but he still did it. And so it's also protecting Rosen from himself, protecting him from his rookiness. And so I understand. I bet they do it differently down the line. Especially if Rosen continues to play the way that he has, and they'll probably have a play or two which allow him that option to make a throw or to use his feet. And yeah. And with that, we'll move on to the next segment of the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk, and what we're going to talk about next. The other positives and negatives from the game on Sunday. That's coming up next on Rise of Sea Red. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And no, aside from the end of the game, aside from Josh Rosen, what are some of the other positives and negatives? For me, my number one positive out of all of this is, well, one main thing mainly, David Johnson looked like David Johnson. The numbers were not eye-popping. He did have over 100 yards statistically from his scrimmage, but he got the workload. He looked like David Johnson, and he had a couple of signature David Johnson plays. And I think number one, that has to be one thing you have to be excited about, because, oh, they figured it out. They figured out how to use him. He was used in the slot. He was used at receiver. They still, I mean, it was only two plays. So one play in week three and two plays in week four where they had Chase Edmonds and David Johnson on the field at the same time. It happened twice. Steve Wilks said that's one of the things they want to see moving forward, and I think we're going to see it more moving forward, but it's still not there. But we finally saw a David Johnson workload.
Yeah, and it makes sense, and I think a lot of it comes down to, and I don't mean this in a negative way, but Chase Edmonds is clearly not ready for the NFL, and it was probably foolish to think he was. So using him in a way that they've been using him lately looks better than trying to almost what seemed like split workload early in the season with David Johnson. Edmonds is, you know, a rookie, small school guy, who just needs some time, but I don't know if the time is, you know, on key drives or key plays or things of that nature.
And another positive for me was sort of the evolution of the offense. We saw bootlegs. We saw jet sweeps. We saw a little bit more. We saw the involvement of Christian Kirk. We saw Chad Williams produce. And I was talking about this before the show, and it's painfully becoming more and more evident that maybe the issues with play calling, Mike McCoy aside, I mean, there's definite criticism that you can have of Mike McCoy, but I think more and more what we're realizing as Mike McCoy starts to call different plays, that it was more Sam Bradford, which was handicapping their play calling and their scheme because of his lack of mobility, his lack of confidence and patience. And as a result, they were only able to go, or he was only comfortable with some of the base plays, which was, you know, your traditional 11 personnel, David Johnson lined in the backfield as a running back instead of motioning him out. And it's, to me, it's becoming painfully evident that for some reason, the solid, productive player that Sam Bradford was really the problem.
Yeah, and then it also comes down to what your quarterback allows you to do. And the reality was always that Bradford is a guy that has never
been able to really, you know, carry an offensive load, even in his heyday, you know, or like the height of his career or whatever. He wasn't able to carry a team offensively. And so when you look at this team's construction, that was something you and I talked about from the jump, is that this isn't like your normal Sam Bradford team. I mean, look at what he was doing with the Vikings, and then you look at their roster, and obviously they didn't have a great running back, but they still had Kyle Rudolph, Stephon Diggs, Adam Thielen. I mean, that's a lot better passing options than what the Cardinals were throwing out there. And so when you have Josh Rosen, who has been successful and, unfortunately for him, saddled with young or unproven or not great or not of equal talent of his, he's still been successful at UCLA. He's still been a guy that's put up really good numbers in college. And so when you take all of that into consideration, it's almost like they were hoping to get the best of Sam Bradford without having the pieces around Bradford to help him be successful. And you know, it kind of goes back to the idea that, from, again, knowing your team, like from the beginning, it probably would have been best for Rosen to start. Now, obviously hindsight's 20/20 and everything, but you and I kind of talked about this from the beginning, is that they babied Bradford so much that we never even really had a look at what he had in the tank or if he had anything in the tank. And so I think if you would have pushed harder during the regular or during preseason in games where there was competition, you could have seen just a little bit more.
Anything else that you could grab, positive or negative, from that game?
I thought another big positive continues to be that this offensive line isn't getting quarterbacks killed, and it might be, maybe it's the lack of snaps played. I don't know. I haven't looked at the percentages. I know the numbers overall are staggeringly low, comparatively speaking. I think it's 12 versus 7 sacks on the season, or 8 sacks. So that's pretty impressive for the Cardinals so far. When you look at it, that they did a nice job of giving Rosen some time and protection. And so we'll see if that continues forward. I thought, outside of the obvious drops that were issues, I thought that you saw a little twinkle from the receiving court. Obviously, Fitz isn't 100%. I would say he's probably closer to 75% at this point right now from a health standpoint. And so they really have no wide receiver one, but you saw Christian Kirk, like you said, kind of step up, and Chad Williams and Ricky Seals-Jones. And there was some life to the unit, so that was nice to see. And then on the other side of the ball defensively, I tweeted about it during the game, and it's becoming blindingly obvious, but maybe there's something you and I are missing or aren't privy to, but whenever Hassan Reddick's on the field, that dude does something. It's just he's rarely on the field to do anything. So it's one of those kind of situations when you look at it overall, it's odd because every time he's on the field, you're like, oh, he looks pretty good. And then but then he's just getting like 14 snaps in a game, or 16 snaps in a game. I don't know.
Or 9 is what it was. But in those 9 snaps, he had a snack. He had a sack. He had a sack. He had a tackle for loss. And I think that's kind of been the success, is that I think they found a way for him to be productive and not be lost. And they're using it in a very specific way with very specific packages. And I mean, apparently the linebacker position in this defense is not for the faint of mind. Josh Bynes is excelling. He's an extremely intelligent player. Gerald Hodges was solid. Again, smart player, veteran player. Deion Buchanan, back in the lineup, did some good things, but still had some thing. And once again, you saw him getting swallowed up by offensive line. Something that you didn't, I mean, it's almost like 2015 was like some dream and the production that he had, because this year, while he's doing some nice things, he doesn't look sure out there, and he's trending in the right direction. But the Deion Buchanan we saw in 2015 is not the Deion Buchanan we're seeing this year. Deion Buchanan looks like a completely different player, completely unsure of himself, and physically being dominated when normally he could just run right through or around people because of his movement skills. But him being out on the field to me was a positive. The fact that as a team, they still, it's, I think it's painfully clear that this scheme that they raved about, the ability to play fast, they are still not there with all of their assignments, in the fact that they still just aren't consistent enough. And I think that's coming, but it's, for a team that we believed would be solid defensively from the get-go, they are inconsistent.
Well, they're inconsistent, and it seems like on both sides of the ball that whatever is being taught is not sticking. We've heard numerous times offensively that David Johnson ran the wrong way, that the wide receivers are not in the right routes, that they're missing blocking calls. I mean, and that's to be expected, but when you're talking about it on both sides of the ball, and Bene Benwickery kind of said something to the effect that, you know, one part of the defense is playing one call and another part of the defense is playing another call, and that's what's creating these big running lanes and big gaps in coverage and things of that nature. And you're saying to yourself, all right, like, I get that it's a new scheme on both sides of the ball, but it's week four.
Yeah, well, this is not unfamiliar, because if we go back to 2013, we had some of the same issues, but they were playing better. And so they started 3-4. They were very disappointing. People were already calling for Carson Palmer to be benched for Drew Stanton. They had defensive issues. They had offensive issues. Carson Palmer was turning the ball over a lot. Receivers weren't in the right spot. Defensively, they were giving things. But we've seen this before. We just haven't seen it to the same level of ineptness that we've gotten early on. So it's been terrible offensively, and even the positives that you saw defensively, they just wear down and they wouldn't be able to keep it up. And you know, maybe we were, for me, in fact, maybe we were too optimistic early on, and it's really going to take that full half season that we see new defenses normally take teams to gel before they get it together.
Well, and it was one of those situations, I think you and I talked about it quite a bit, that we knew this was going to take a half a season. But I think the gaps that are there, we expected a half a season for certain things, and it's the run defense. I mean, who would have expected the run defense to be atrocious? I mean, it's the second worst in the league at this point. That's not something you and I expected. I mean, like you said, we definitely expected issues. We weren't expecting them to come out and be, you know, again, the Jacksonville Jaguars or the 85 Bears or whatever great, you know, the 13 Seahawks. That's not what we were expecting. But they are literally the worst team the second worst team in the NFL against the run. And I don't think we expected that. I don't think we expected them to, especially of the fool's gold that was the preseason, I don't think we expected them not to be causing any turnovers.
Right.
And so they're number four, or sorry, they have caused 4 turnovers on the entire season. They're negative 4 in terms of takeaways. So they're minus 4 in takeaways, which is tied for last in the NFL. So, you know, the worst plus minus turnover ratio in the NFL. And that goes back to what I've talked about, you know, twice now, and what we talked about on, you know, kind of to start this whole conversation, is that when you are banking on being a run the ball and play defense type of team, and then you can't run the ball and you can't play defense, and it's not that they're like atrocious defensively, but when you're banking on being really good defensively, you have to cause turnovers. You have to give your offense a conservative offense, a short field, and easy plays to make. And instead, you're continually setting up your offense to have to win games late on long drives and kind of, you know, in running the ball, again, when they're not being successful with it in those situations. And so everything that they've wanted to do just hasn't worked out yet. And it's making all of the flaws of the 0-4 show a lot worse than they are, because what you were sold at the beginning of the season is not what you're seeing at all. Like you said, with the Bruce Arians thing, he talked about no risk it, no biscuit. And then he came out and he threw the ball 48 times a game and throwing the ball deep downfield, and you had big plays and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, with this, you know, we're going to be a team that, it, you know, runs the football and controls the clock and causes turnovers. And you look at it and you go, okay, well, you're one of the worst teams in the NFL at running the ball. You're one of the worst teams in the NFL stopping the run, and you don't cause any turnovers. Okay, so what is your identity? Who are you? And I think that's where, in terms of everything, I think that's where the disenchantment early on with Steve Wilks is, because his response is eerily similar right now to the response of late-term Ken Whisenhunt and Bruce Arians of, you know, we're not executing. And so that is, I think that is where the negative aspect of Wilks and maybe those that are already disenchanted with him are coming from.
We come back next on the Rise Up C-Red podcast. We'll talk about a couple of things. We'll talk about Wilks and the coaching staff and their future. And we'll talk about the upcoming game against the San Francisco 49ers. That's coming up next on Rise Up C-Red, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And that leads us to our discussion of Steve Wilks and the coaching staff. There are definitely many fans out there who believe that Wilks is in over his head, that he might just be a bad head coach after only 4 games. Fire Wilks, fire McCoy, fire Kine, fire everybody. There is that. And it's a minority, but what is it too early to say that Wilks is in over his head? I still look at the body of work. There was this column, this really good column in the paper about how he looks and sounds like a good coach on Monday through Saturday. And I think that's part of the job. I don't think he's going to lose the locker room overall with what he's preaching. I think he's being consistent. I think he's being organized. And I think the results are just so far worse, just so much worse than what anyone expected early on, that fans have gotten used to success and don't know how to handle this. I'm still holding my judgment. I don't think Wilks is a bad coach. I think that there have been some questionable decisions, but, you know, you get questionable decisions from all coaches. I mean, veteran coaches. Oh, Belichick sometimes does things that you question. Andy Reid is horrible at game management historically. I'm not even ready to say that Mike McCoy needs to go, because we haven't seen, and like we said, now we get to see how much was McCoy that was the issue and how much was Bradford. And guess what? At least early on, it looks like it was more Bradford that was the problem than McCoy.
Well, and I think there's a couple things at play here. I think the first thing with Wilkes is I don't think saying that he has been in over his head to this point is saying that he's going to be a bad coach for the duration of his career. I think through four games, I think the first two games, his team was woefully unprepared and for what was coming. I mean, you don't get outscored 57-6 or whatever. Or 57-6 in two games if you're prepared. I don't even care if you're bad. That just doesn't happen. And so I think the last two games, it has come down to more that he is saying those decisions that were executed poorly were my decisions to make, not McCoy's decisions to make, or I have veto power, or whatever. However he said it today or the other day when he was talking about the calls and things of that nature. And when you look at both of those situations and those things, I think it begins to lend credence to right now he's in over his head, but it doesn't mean he won't learn and grow. And I think that's to your point, that it's too early to say like this is who he is as a coach. Now, if he continues to, I mean, if the season ends at 1-15 and there's just baffling end of game decisions in, you know, 10 of those games that cost them the game or seemingly cost them the game, or, you know, there's 10 more games that were like the first two and they, you know, they lose 12 games by a combined score of, you know, or on average of, you know, 28-3, then I think that's slightly different. I think then you do say, okay, maybe he is just a bad coach, but it, like you said, it's four games, but through four games, I don't think he's shown that he was ready for this, and that it's probably more than he was expecting, especially from this perspective of, again, you went from being a guy that was concerned with one side of the ball to now you have to be concerned on all three phases of the game. And even if you are giving kind of an overall power to Mike McCoy, you're still in terms of the results at fault for that, because you are the head coach. Now, on the McCoy thing, I mean, everybody knows where I've stood on this. The positive spin for me was always that he was adaptable to personnel and that he had head coaching experience. So it was good for Wilkes in his first season. I was never a McCoy fan. Like, the hiring was never something that I was like, oh, this is exactly what the Arizona Cardinals need. And the reason why was always simple. It was always simply because of how bad he failed in Denver and how that situation was too similar to this one. Now, I will say that I don't think you or I ever thought Josh Rosen was anywhere near the project of Paxton Lynch. But, I mean, Case Keenum and Sam Bradford are not Case Keenum. Trevor Siemian and Sam Bradford are similar in their, you know, where they are in their careers, and ability and things of that nature. And so when you look at all of that, I was never a McCoy fan. The way he's schemed and designed offenses the last several years, whether it be in with the Chargers. I couldn't remember if I can say San Diego or LA. So with the Chargers and then the Broncos, it is, again, similar to what you're seeing in Arizona. And so I am willing to give him a continuation in the sense of this. The last two games, they've scored 31 points. You know, 15 and a half points a game is still awful. I mean, really, really bad, especially in today's NFL. But I will give him the benefit of the doubt that they faced four good to great defenses. And I will use this upcoming week against the San Francisco 49ers to kind of be the yard mark of where they are, because the 49ers are giving up 30 points per game. So if the offense is again bad this week or fails to put up points or anything of that nature, at that juncture, I think it's time to start being like, I don't know if Mike McCoy is the right man for this job, and more importantly, for Josh Rosen moving forward.
For me, the couple of things that I, you know, the observations. One, I think one thing that keeps Wilkes from losing players in the locker room, his coaching staff, is the fact that he takes that burden himself every single time. While they talk about, while he talks about, well, we didn't do this and we didn't do this, you never got the feeling, like, even he called out Mike McCoy without making it feel like he was calling him out. He talked about the production of Sam Bradford without saying that Sam Bradford was bad. And so he is protecting his players and his coaches with the cover of he's the head coach and they're his decisions ultimately. And then the other thing, when you say he wasn't prepared, I think what he wasn't prepared for, it wasn't prepared for how things went. He was unprepared for the failure that his players had on the field. I don't think he was, I don't think in a million years he thought that he would see that sort of failure offensively and defensively. But let's move on and talk about the San Francisco game, because now we've got what should be a winnable game. It is a road game on in the division, but it is against a 49ers team that has given up a whole lot of points, and they have C.J. Beathard, a quarterback. They have a number of injured players. What is there to look for against this San Francisco team? I think, number one, you've got to kind of look at, well, Beathard played well last week. There's a lot of positives. But if I recall, Beathard also came in and offered a bit of a spark when he became the starter, became the quarterback last year, and things sort of went downhill from there. What are you looking for from the 49ers offensively and defensively?
I think the first thing that you look at is what we've kind of talked about, and not to, you know, beat a dead horse, but how bad the Cardinals have been against the run. Guess who is top, I think, three. He might even be number two. No, he's three. Guess who's number three in the NFL in rushing yards? That'd be one Matt Breida, who I don't even know if that's how you pronounce his name. And
I keep hearing him Matt Breida. I thought it was Breida, but I keep hearing it Breida, so I'm going to go with that.
So he is third in the NFL in rushing this year. When you're saying that, and then the Cardinals are the second worst team against the run, that is a recipe for a bad day. That being said, again, there's no reason, none whatsoever, that the Cardinals can't get out to a fast start and kind of nullify what the 49ers do well, which is run the football with Matt Breida. So when you look at it from that juncture, you want to put the game in the hands of C.J. Beathard. So I would say that is the first thing on the defensive side of the ball, that you do not want Matt Breida to continue to put up big numbers, because we've seen for the Cardinals through two games, if the game's close at the end, right now they're just not ready to win those games. That doesn't mean they won't be, and that doesn't mean that they can't against the 49ers. But if you're struggling to score 14, 16, 17 points against the team a team that's giving up 30 points per game on the season, then, I mean, kind of quite frankly, you probably don't even deserve to win that game, right? Because, I mean, you're only scoring half of the points that they're allowing on the season. So I really think this is the week that you'd like to see them kind of like what they did against the Bears and get out to a fast start, and then maybe they can start to lean on that running game. And you know, Rosen has shown that he's a little more consistent and as a passer in pushing the offense down the field. So I think that's what you look for on the defensive side of the ball. Offensively, just catch the ball. I mean, really, that's all you can say right now, right? From that perspective, is just catch the ball. They have to find a way to get some type of positive push in the run game. David Johnson, like you said, he had a nice David Johnson like number, like gross total number game, but it wasn't very efficient. 3.2 yards per carry is not exactly what we would call running the ball well. And so they're reinserting Andre Smith back into the lineup at right tackle. John Wetzel, through PFF's grading system, has been their best offensive lineman. So this is an interesting move that goes to show kind of that Wilkes is maybe less enthralled with the run game blocking than he is worried about, you know, passing the ball and pass blocking. So for that reason, I think you really want to see David Johnson kind of have that productive day. The 49ers defense is not good, and it is in fact bad. So you just want to see this offensive funk, this team that's averaging 9.3 points per game, kind of get out of that and start to become the offense that we had hoped. And that doesn't mean they're going to be averaging 30 points per game. They're not going to be the Los Angeles Rams. But if they can get around the, 19 to 20 points per game mark, I think they set themselves up to be a team that could finish the season, right around six wins like you're talking about.
And with the 49ers, I mean, they need a division win in the worst way. They've lost the Seahawks. They've lost the Rams. The losing will continue to be a problem.
Well, and remember, after this game, they have their first East
Coast. Early start, yep.
And I use that term loosely because it's Minnesota. But, yeah, their first early start game of the season. So they're going to
have a short week against the Denver Broncos in their defense.
Right. So this is the game to get healthy. This is the game to find your way offensively, to get things going defensively, to kind of – like if there's a game they're going to win, I mean, you and I, we both thought they could have won that Seattle game. Quite frankly, they should have won that Seattle game. But if they don't come out of San Francisco with a win – you and I, the conversation next week will be, will they win a game before the bye week? That's how right. The conversation changes. And so you don't want to put that desperation on them. You don't want to say, oh, this team has a good chance of going 0-8. But at the same time, you would like to see some air of desperation from the team, from the staff, that, man, this is a really important game because this is a, like you said at the beginning, a winnable game against a bad San Francisco team.
And hopefully that is what we talk about next week, is a win over the San Francisco 49ers. Our show next week will be delayed a day. I will be out of town, so I will be driving the night we normally record. So we'll be back You'll probably will record on a Wednesday night, publish it on Thursday, so you have to wait an extra day if you're listening out there. Thanks for listening, as always. We'll wrap this edition of the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess. We'll be back next week. Go Cardinals. And, yes, we will talk more and more about Josh Rosen. Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up C-Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise Up Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up C-Red.